Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Monday morning quarterback on SI.com. Peter King just put out his summer power poll. And guess which team he lists as number one? Come on, Kev.
The Cleveland Browns.
No. Who's he list as number one?
I don't know. Who's he list?
Who would you put at number one in your power poll?
I don't know. I have to give that some thought.
All right. Well, we'll take that aside. We don't have enough time in the show for that.
I want to make an educated
number one,
choice.
Number one, Peter King picks the Baltimore Ravens.
That would not be it.
That is number one on his list. A lot of it has a lot of trust in John Harbaugh and also Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator. He also says they're battle tested. Number two, he has the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, let's face it, you get Jimmy Graham. Although it was interesting, I was talking to a guy who has a relative who was drafted in the seventh round by the Seahawks, who had been a defensive lineman. They said, they're working that kid out at center. And I told him, I said, you got to remember, they traded Max Unger to get Jimmy Graham. He goes, oh. I said, yeah. He has Seattle number two. He has Green Bay number three. He has Kansas City number four. He has New England number five. He has the Minnesota Vikings, and Adrian Peterson reported to OTAs today. He has Minnesota number six. He has the Philadelphia Eagles number seven. I can sense you're getting mad.
Not yet. But you remember that, when we had Merrill Reese on, he said that, Chip Kelly has basically said, we're going to the Super Bowl, with the team he wants to build.
Sam Bradford, he mentions, is the key, obviously. He has the Pittsburgh Steelers number eight. He predicts the Steeler record. Is he predicting records here? I'm trying to see here. I don't think he is. No, these are last year's records. Okay. He has the Steelers at number eight. He says, quote, this is Peter King, I like Antonio Brown a lot, like Ben Roethlisberger a lot, but this faith is subject heavily on the ascension of Keith Butler to defensive coordinator after 16 seasons as a defensive assistant below the coordinator level. Mike Tomlin is putting tremendous faith in Butler, who replaces Hall of Famer Dick LeBeau, to be a breath of fresh and productive air. Risky move and early returns are good, but early returns come in shorts and T-shirts on the south side of Pittsburgh, not on a cruel Thursday night in Foxborough. He has Denver number nine. He has Arizona number 10. He has Indianapolis number 11. Cincinnati is 12. The Dallas Cowboys are 13. And because he doesn't have total trust in the defense at all. He has New Orleans 14, San Diego 15, Miami 16, the Detroit Lions 17, Buffalo 18. And by the way, Rex Ryan did a really cool thing this week. Did you hear about that?
No, I don't think I did.
OTAs, you're allowed 10. Now, you can do whatever you want with your 10. So, do you know what he did with one of his 10? put the entire team on buses, and took them over to Jim Kelly's golf tournament to play. That's special. They will not lose a football game by missing an on-field OTA to go to a charity golf tournament for Jim Kelly. Leadership comes in all forms. St. Louis Rams 19, Carolina 20, Atlanta 21, the New York Giants 22, Chicago 23, the New York Jets 24, the Redskins 25. A lot of Redskin fans. I'd love to muster up enthusiasm for Jay Gruden, a good man and a good coach, Peter King writes, but I can't get his RG3 negativity out of my head from last season. Only Robert Griffin III can do that for both of us. 49ers, 26. Browns, 27. Houston Texans, 28. By the way, they will be the team on Hard Knocks this year. I will be watching that to see how Bill reacts. 29, Tampa Bay. 30, Jacksonville. 31, the Oakland Raiders. 32, the Tennessee Titans. He writes about Tennessee, I love the Marcus Mariota pick. I don't love the supporting cast, and he's not a guy who's going to be great from day one or on day 24. You don't like the Ravens in the one spot.
I don't like the Ravens in any spot that is above 20.
He writes about the Ravens. Why? I trust John Harbaugh to find answers in a league of a truly devoid of a truly great team. I trust the running game to take pressure off Joe Flacco until he develops chemistry with new receivers. I trust Dean Pease to replace Nagata with a combination platter of front seven changeups. This is a battle-tested team that had 2 14-point playoff leads in Foxborough last January. I think the Ravens will find a way. The Ravens are one of the better coach teams in the NFL, without question. They are one of the better coach teams in the NFL. That was a problem for the Steelers. I think the Ravens have a better coaching staff. You didn't want to hear that.
No, I'm good with that. I don't have a problem with that.
Ravens. One. Ravens.
We'll see.
No, it's just an off-season prediction. These are things that you like. And
it's a long time until January.
Doesn't turn out the way you like. You get better about it. It's
a long time till January.
25 years of Penn State in the Big Ten. 25th anniversary is Thursday. We had Jim Delaney on last week, working on John Bacon to be on the show, the great Michigan historian, to be on the show Thursday, working on John for that. And we'll have Jody McDonald Thursday from CBS Sports, Dick Girardi, Belmont Stakes on Friday. And we are working very hard on Joe Buck and Greg Norman to talk about golf coverage on Fox, which you've already verbally destroyed without ever seeing it.
No, I said it's going to be different to see Fox in their style of sports doing that. And I refer to their studio shows more than the way they do play-by-play. Right.
I was going to say, what's their style of sports? they do games. Hey, what does Fox do in a game that's different than everybody else, except be the ones that invented the Fox box, except being the ones that brought in Mike Pereira as an officiating consultant? I mean, they've been leading and other people have been following. I mean, What has Fox followed, except their first year, obviously, is the formula doing? What has Fox followed somebody else's innovation? Everybody else has followed Fox. Now, it doesn't mean everything works, like the camera at NASCAR that fell onto the track.
Yeah, right. But they have one in the track.
Right, but I'm saying, what has Fox... Fox has been able to think outside the box, and they've improved our viewing experience.
The only thing that Fox has done as far as the play-by-play broadcast of it that I think has failed miserably was the hockey thing. The glowing puck. And then this
trail of the puck
when it was over whatever miles an hour.
I agree with that. That's very fair. That's right on. But Mike Pereira, let's bring him in there. Suddenly, no.
Hey, oh, yeah. At everything.
Suddenly, ESPN's going, what are they doing? They did what? I get one of those.
Not a big fan of the Hollywood Hotel at NASCAR races.
The Fox Box? Nobody had that before Fox. That's not going to work. People don't want to see that up there. Now it's like, everybody's like, I think we ought to put one of those up there.
Yeah, not a big fan of the Hollywood Hotel
What is
setup.
That? I have no idea.
Well, it's what they do for NASCAR. They have, it's basically a enclosed studio. And it's kind of like I guess the best way to describe it would be like, it would be like a tractor trailer on a scissor lift. It would be like the trailer of a tractor trailer on a scissor lift.
Okay, so during the broadcast, this is where they do the broadcast from?
No, that's where they do the pre-race and look-ins and studio-style stuff.
You got to separate that.
Well, but see, this is all part of the broadcast now. I mean, when you're putting that in with the broadcast, this is not a studio show in L.A. like at football. This is at the track.
You got to separate that. When there's actual action, they cover action.
But if you're going to do that, like do what everybody else seems to be doing, and NBC Sports does this a lot. They'll put their studio style show on a lift, like outdoors. That makes sense to me. You know, out where you can see the track, not this enclosed studio with a backdrop. You know, when ESPN does College Game Day, they do it live in front of a whole bunch of fans, not in front of a green screen.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to be on site to do your studio show or whatever, or your pregame or whatever you want to call it, then be there. Be there amongst the fans. But I am not a big fan of Fox Sports studio shows. For lack of a better way to describe it, their version of SportsCenter. It's just,
okay.
It's not me.
And guess what studio shows I watch?
None.
Thus, inner peace. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you think you can't afford a new car, Sunbury Motors Hyundai says you can! Sunbury Motors Hyundai is Central Pennsylvania's volume Hyundai dealer. We sell volume by making brand new Hyundais more affordable than other import brands. Listen to this. A brand new 2016 Hyundai Elantra Value Edition comes with push button start, sunroof, Bluetooth, alloy wheels, and sells for only $17,827 or $218 per month. You have to hurry because these 29 Elantras will be gone in 2 weeks. All new Hyundais come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. A brand new Elantra with lots of stuff for only $218 per month and comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
And it's not a lease, you own it.
No wonder Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the volume Hyundai dealer in Central PA. Sonatas, Santa Fe, Tucson's, and Velocitors are all priced at volume pricing. Remember, when you think you can't afford a new car, Sunbury Motors Hyundai says you can. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
$218 per month for 84 months at 3.89% with 10% down plus tax and tags.
All right, welcome back. 25 years of Penn State in the Big Ten. This really was an interesting odyssey to make this happen. And we're going to take calls tomorrow on what you think of Penn State in the Big Ten. let's take your son, for example. Where's your son, 40 now?
No.
All your son knows is Penn State and the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's exactly that's right.
And for anybody who is 25 years of age, you know, Penn State's first game in the Big Ten, they were 3 years old. So if you're 25 years or younger, that's all you really know of Penn State being in the Big Ten. And essentially, if you're 30 years old or younger, yeah, really, for all practical purposes, all you know is Penn State in the Big Ten. And really, I mean, when they got they played the first Big Ten game, you're 8 years old. Okay? And the 25th anniversary of the official vote to put Penn State into the Big Ten is Thursday, the 4th. We had Jim Delaney on last week talking about it. Had him on for a half an hour. We'll replay that for you at some point. And I'm going to try and get John Bacon on the show from Michigan to talk about this. I know I've talked about the story in some ways before, and I'll probably repeat it a bit tomorrow to set the show up tomorrow. But this really goes back to 1980 and 1981. I was a young reporter, you know, doing just radio at that time, covering Penn State. And I just started on the basketball part of it because I'd filled in for Fran on a game. And Joe Paterno was trying to put together an all-sports Eastern Conference. What he wanted to have was Penn State, Pitt, West Virginia, Rutgers, Temple, Syracuse, Boston College. And he really felt he had a really good chance that with that block of schools, they could really persuade Maryland to be the eighth school. Not only that, he developed a great relationship with Bruce Skinner and Don Meyer at the Fiesta Bowl, where there was a good chance that they could go out and get this Eastern All-Sports Conference, whatever it was going to be called, an automatic bid to the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, that's how far along he was. And I remember sitting down with him in the office, his office, in Rec Hall, not at Greenberg, and obviously not at Lash, but in Rec Hall, sitting with him. And I remember him telling me, he says, Steve, these are really important interviews. And I fed the interviews to NBC Radio. I fed the interviews to Mutual as well at the time. So he knew I was trying to do more than just do a state college interview. And he also knew how interested I was in the idea and the concept. And he told me how important it was. And that's what he wanted to do. And what he wanted to do was, by having an all-sports conference, remember, Joe's athletic director at Penn State right now. There's that two-year window where he's athletic director in 80 to March of 82. So he's the AD. And his idea was to not only have in football and in men's basketball, but to block schedule. Okay, great news. Penn State's going to play, pick a school, Syracuse. And Penn State's going to be playing on the road. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the softball team, the baseball team, the women's lacrosse team, and the men's lacrosse team, and we're going to send them all up, and they're all going to play at Syracuse this weekend. Block scheduling. That's what he wanted to do, was block scheduling. That's how he termed it. At the same time, not at the same time, but slightly before this, in 1978-79, there are two great visionaries in the East that are not just looking at the next budget, but have the ability to think long-term. Joe Paterno was one. The other one was Dave Gavitt. Dave Gavitt, of course, former head basketball coach of Providence, the AD of Providence. And the Easton basketball is not organized at all. It's ECAC this, ECAC that, and nothing going on. So Dave Gavitt comes up with an idea. Big East Basketball Conference. Georgetown, Seton Hall, Villanova, St. John's, UConn, Boston College, Providence, Syracuse. He starts it. So here it is, 1981. And Joe has this Eastern All-Sports Conference idea. Well, the Big East wants to, you know, well, he wants to at least sit down with Dave Gavitt and gauge, okay, can Penn State remain independent in football, but maybe get its basketball and all its other sports into the Big East? So he sits down with Dave Gavitt at Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. And the two of them, these two great visionaries, there are very few visionaries anywhere today. I mean, almost everything we do now is by the seat of our pants, and everybody knows it, right? Wow, how's the poll going to look? These two great visionaries, they could see the big picture, are sitting in one room together, kind of room that you'd really want to be in. And Dave Gavitt, after really weighing his membership, knew that Georgetown, Villanova, Seton Hall, St. John's, and the administration at his school, Providence, we're gonna vote no about Penn State basketball being in the Big East. In other words, what did Penn State basketball bring to the table? He was about television markets, Georgetown, D.C., Villanova, Philadelphia, St. John's, Seton Hall, New York, and Northern Jersey, UConn, Hartford, Providence. Providence is a decent-sized little city. Boston. And, of course, upstate New York with Syracuse. That was one of the concepts behind Dave Gavitt's idea. Big television markets. Well, Penn State basketball doesn't bring... Now, football brings a wide variety of markets to the table. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, D.C., Baltimore, New York. I mean, Penn State is a universal brand. So, basically, he tells Joe, he said, look, he said, I think essentially, look, I don't know if I would mind. I think, I think he sees the issues here, but the membership isn't going to do it, and they don't do it. I shall continue the story after the news, which will lead to 25 years of Penn State and the Big Ten. On News Radio 1070, WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Roads 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Gutsy Group at Sunbury Motors. Kevin's driving another vehicle.
This week we're featuring the Hyundai Sonata, the Turbo Limited, the 2.0 Turbo Limited, which gives you a little bit more power without using a lot more fuel. And one of the nice things about, one of the many nice things about a well-equipped vehicle like the Sonata Turbo is the price is well under the mark that you would normally expect. I mean, this is a vehicle that you would expect being a family passenger vehicle in the mid-30s or higher with all the added features that are in it, including the 8-inch screen, HD radio, nav. You also have the backup camera. You have sensors all the way around the vehicle that will help you not only maintain speed when you're cruising, but also give you alerts when you're out of the lane, when you are traveling too close to a vehicle, or when there's something behind you and you're backing up, it'll actually alert you there. You would expect that this vehicle would be well into the 30s and 40s, but this one is right now not even $30,000 at Sunbury Motors Hyundai with all the discounts that are available to you. Find out more at sunburymotors.com or visit them in person in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. Say hi to Skip, Daniel, and the folks at Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Terrific. Great deals. All right, continuing with our story, how Penn State got to the Big Ten. I was up to the point where they're at Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, just north of Hartford. Dave Gavitt meets with Joe Paterno, and essentially he tells him that, hey, look, you know, how much we respect Penn State, the whole thing, but, you know, basketball-wise, you know, this is what we're aiming at. It's what we're trying to do. Now, Joe understands that, but he had to at least explore what was going on here based on the landscape of what's happening. And it's at that point when they're done and Joe leaves, Mike Trangese, as the story goes. Now, this part you saw in 30 for 30. The other parts I'm telling you, you know, are parts that I picked up from Joe when I've talked to him. And when Trangese, according to the story he tells on 30 for 30, is that he looks at Dave Gavitt and says, do you think we'll rue the day that we told him, don't think so? And Gavitt didn't really respond. Now, remember, what Dave Gavitt is trying to do is what is best for college basketball in the East. Because, the college basketball in the East had no... organization, just like Eastern football had no organization. So then after this goes through, then the big move is made. That's where Jay Crothamel of Syracuse and Bill Flynn, the athletic director of Boston College, go and talk to Dean Billick at Pitt. And they say to him, he says, if we could open up a door to get you into the Big East, would you take it? And Billick said, yes. Okay. So he says, yes. Well, Pitt fits everything that they're looking at. Okay. Big city, TV market. And that's what they're looking for. Now, for Pitt basketball, this is a great move. I mean, let's face it, a great move to get into the Big East. It took them a while to find some traction in the Big East, but once they do, you know, there's a contract with ESPN, you know, and Pitt gets what it wants. They get into a major Eastern Conference that is on the rise. And, now, remember, this is 1981. Remember in 1985, Villanova beats Georgetown for the national championship at Rupp Arena. What everyone forgets is that there was a third Big East team in the Final Four, St. John's. In fact, Raleigh Massimino will tell you that if St. John's beats Georgetown in the semifinal, Villanova probably doesn't win the national championship because they could match up with Georgetown. They didn't match up with St. John's. So Pitt has what it wants. They get into a prestigious basketball conference in the Big East. They're with Syracuse, BC, UConn, Georgetown, Villanova. It's great. And not only that, but they can still play Penn State, West Virginia, Rutgers, you know, just like business as usual in the East. Penn State goes out, takes care of its business, upgrades its schedule, gets Nebraska, Alabama, Notre Dame on there to compensate for some of the weaker Eastern teams. Meanwhile, Pitt gets better, is playing some great football. In fact, Pitt's playing great football from 78 to, I'd say, let's be fair. Pitt's playing great football from 77 up until the end of 83, 76. Pitt won the national championship in 76. From 1984 to 1983, Pitt's playing great football in that 10-season window. From 1974 to 1983, Pitt's playing great football. After 83, it falls down significantly. And Penn State wins two national championships. Then, I was doing a talk show here in State College at the time. And John Bacon is going to join us on Thursday to talk about the Big Ten perspective. John's always great. Love having John on the show. He just texted me now. And so things are going along, and in the summer of 1989, I'm doing a talk show here in State College. And then athletic director Jim Tarman, you know, Joe stopped being athletic director in March of 82. Jim Tarman taking over. I love talking to Jim about big ticket items, just like I did with Jim Delaney last week. Big ticket, big picture stuff. Anybody can sit there and do the small stuff and go, hey, what do you think about this week's game? And there had been a story in Chicago about the Wayne Duke had left as the Big Ten commissioner, and one of the things in part of the interview, Penn State's name loosely came up. So I said to Jim, I said, let's talk conferences, you know, about the Atlantic 10. We talked about the Atlantic 10. I said, what about Penn State someplace else? Like, I said, you know, the ACC, the Big Ten. And he talked about the pros and cons of each. I said, I saw something about something Wayne Duke said a year ago about Penn State. I said, is Penn State and the Big Ten on some burner? Is the burner in any way on? And his answer was, back burner on low. And I sat there and I thought to myself, as I was going to the next question, that means the burner, it may be on low, but that means the burner is actually on. I thought, that's a little different. So this is in July of 89. December of 89 comes up. Now I hear it, more than hear it, that it's real. So talked about it, and people got a little, hey, what's going on here? And I remember Penn State had a basketball trip to Birmingham, Alabama, to play in UAB's basketball tournament, which I talked about the other day, yesterday, when we talked about UAB and football. And they make the announcement that Penn State wants to apply to go to the Big Ten. Rice Jordan is there. Jim Tarman's there. Joe's there. They have a press conference at the Nittany Lion Inn. And I remember flying down to Birmingham. Ron Bertovich is sitting there, and the Atlantic 10 commissioner, because it's going to be an ESPN game. That's why they were playing the game. And he says, I think you guys have made a mistake. And I said, geez, wrong. I don't think so. You know, I don't blame Ron for saying that. That's his conference. Okay. But now, between December 20th, 21st, I think it was the 20th of December this came out. December 20th, this comes out. From that point on, the stories are all, one after another, not exactly positive. And I'm sitting there going, geez, what the heck's going on here? Because everything had been done at the presidential level by Stanley Eikenberry of Illinois, the chancellor. And he had been a professor, dean here at Penn State. And in working with Bryce Jordan and other Big Ten presidents, they thought this would be a great fit in a wide range of areas. But we all know practically, you know, for sports, this is what people talk about. You can talk about all the, hey, we have great academic sharing for the ag program. Hey, cool. You know, and the average fan goes, hey, yeah, great. What time's today's game? So this isn't going well. And I'm sure when we have John Bacon on, he'll tell you how much Bo Schembechler respected Joe, but the process really bugged him as to how this was done, because they left the athletic people out of it. When they finally do vote, the vote is 6-3 in favor of Penn State getting in. Now, you need 7 to get in. You're saying that adds up to 9. I'll explain it in a moment. The 3 no votes are Indiana, Michigan, and the single most vehement of all, Minnesota. Rick Bay was the athletic director at Minnesota, and my understanding is was absolutely vehement in no about Penn State. Who's the 7th vote? Northwestern. Remember in 1990, Northwestern in every sport, it's not going well. The other nine teams in the Big Ten start out the basketball season knowing they're 2-0 because they're all going to beat Northwestern twice. In 1990, Northwestern is everybody's homecoming game. So Northwestern's big fear is Penn State's replacing us. It's going to be the Big Ten without Northwestern. The other schools absolutely and in no uncertain terms reassure Northwestern they're going to go forward with 11. I think Jim Delaney got in there. He said, look, they're going forward with 11. You're not being kicked to the curb. Once Northwestern had assurances that they meant business going forward as 11 and there'd be no changes in the existing members, they vote yes and say yes to getting Penn State in 7-3. Now, because of how this was handled, as Jim Delaney explained to us on the show last week, how they handled Nebraska, Maryland, and Rutgers, and how smoothly all of them went, were all direct offshoots about how poorly they handled the Penn State part getting in. And there's a reason for that, right? And before you get bitter about the reasons, think about this. Nobody had done this. Nobody had expanded conferences before. Penn State suddenly shook everything up. What the heck's going on here? I mean, all the other moves that have been made all came after Penn State. So nobody really knew what to do. And it wasn't handled right, and they know it. That's why if it had been the reverse and they'd brought Maryland in this way, I can tell you Penn State would have come into this conference with an 11-0 vote, and it would have been smooth as, because they would have made all the mistakes on somebody else. So you have to put yourself in that point in time when you're talking about it. Now it came to the Atlantic 10. Now what do you do with the Atlantic 10? Penn State has, in its football contracts, okay, the plan was originally for Penn State to get into the Big Ten in 1995-96. That was supposed to be the first year, 95-96. 95-96 for basketball, 96 for football. Penn State doesn't want that. They want to accelerate this thing. They want, hey, look, we're going to do this. Let's just do it. So the Big Ten says, hey, you can work out your schedules. We'll work it out. Penn State's contract with Pitt ends after the 92 season. Their contract with Syracuse ended at the end of the 92 season, with Boston College at the end of the 92 season. So Penn State thinks, hey, look, maybe we can get into the Big Ten by 93. They get a hold of West Virginia, which had 2 years remaining on the contract, which gets them to 1994. And West Virginia says, yeah, okay. You know, I think there's a buyout involved, but they say, yeah, okay, we'll work it out. The best one was Notre Dame. Notre Dame called Penn State. Now, remember, this is 1990, 1991. Okay? It's like 1990, 1991. Penn State is beating Notre Dame all the time. Right? All the time. You name it, Penn State, I think, what, at this point, Penn State, what, after the end of the 91 season, Penn State's 8-3 against Notre Dame in the 11 games. Notre Dame called, hey, we'll help you. We'll get out, because they're like, they're begging to get out. And, of course, Penn State accepts it because they need the space. Now what do you do about the Atlantic 10? Penn State's contract with the Atlantic 10 runs out June 30th of 1991. Well, here it is, 1990. The Atlantic 10 wants Penn State out. We'll tell you how they got out and how they were able to stay in an extra year in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKO. All right, so now how does Penn State handle the Atlantic 10 part? Now they're in 7-3, a little more tenuous than they want it to be. Now the Atlantic 10 wants Penn State out. They've got 1 year remaining on the contract for the 90-91 season. Six schools right away: Rhode Island, UMass, St. Joe's, George Washington, and Duquesne, and St. Bonaventure. Those six schools want Penn State out, and they are voting no. And by the way, I believe it's Rhode Island leading the way. We want them out. Okay? That's it. So those six schools want Penn State out, and they are hard and fast no votes. UMass, Rhode Island, Duquesne, George Washington, St. Bonaventure, and St. Joe's. Charlie Theokas is the athletic director at Temple, and he says, I don't think this is a very smart move. So he says, hey, look, Temple's going to vote yes to keep Penn State in. And Rutgers, and I cannot for the life of me remember Rutgers athletic director at the time, votes yes to keep Penn State in. Now what does West Virginia do? West Virginia abstains. West Virginia abstains. You need seven to kick the team out. Six votes no. Or six votes yes to kick out, two votes no, one abstention, it doesn't pass. Penn State stays in. That's how they stayed in. Penn State not only gets to play its final season contractually in the Atlantic 10, 90-91, but as usual, Rainey Portland and their team win the Atlantic 10 championship. I think they won almost all of them, but one out of the nine. Maybe there's two they didn't win, but you know her teams were always great. And after a near miss in 1989 at Rutgers, Penn State goes out and wins its opening game in the quarterfinals against Duquesne at the Palestra, and then upsets Temple when Mick Kilgore pulls a Chris Webber and calls a timeout they don't have on an inbounds play. He can't get the ball inbounds. He calls timeout. Penn State then hits the technical, wins the game, and now hosts the Atlantic 10 championship, its last ever Atlantic 10 game. And Penn State blows out to a huge lead in the first 10 minutes. I mean, I'm talking never threatened. In fact, my feet are up most of the game. Alice McKinney hit a meaningless three-point shot at the wire to cut a nine-point lead down to six, which is the closest they ever got. And poor Ron Brnovich, great guy. I see Ron so often these days. All right, has to hand Penn State. They try to pry the trophy out of his hands. At midcourt, Ron handled it with great class. And then Penn State gets in and starts playing. They have 1 year of independence in basketball. But that's the story about how all of this came about. At least to the best of my knowledge, with all the sources I've had over time. I tell you everything I know. So, but that's the story about how it came about. The series of one-vote margins. Amazing, isn't it? Tomorrow, your thoughts on 25 years of Penn State in the Big Ten. John Bacon, the great Michigan historian, is such a good friend. On Thursday, along with Jody Mack, Jody McDonald from CBS Sports. Dick Girardi on the Belmont Stakes on Friday. Looking forward to that. Hope you enjoyed Story Time with Steve. More bedtime stories coming up later in the week.